This is Y Nada Más. A Real Madrid Podcast.
Everybody, welcome to Y Nada Más, a Real Madrid podcast. I am your host, Eric Rivera, and we are back after the international break. We are finally back to club football, to La Liga, to everything, you know. So I am excited to be back. I took a little break during the international break, and I had to fix a bunch of stuff because my software here, my computer, man, I don't know what it is, but it was killing the quality of the show, and then I was trying to get everything back on running again. So I'm back here, and I'm just back that I'm just happy that we are back in club football. So let me tell you something. I was having these thoughts about international football before we get into, you know, today's game, because I'm doing this podcast right after the game today against Shakhtar Donetsk. Of course, we won 5-0, and we'll get into that. But I just wanted to say, you know, international football, it's so funny how things have essentially, you know, international football used to be such a big deal for me. I used to love it, you know. I used to not be, I mean, I was always interested, obviously, in club football because I've been a Real Madrid fan for so long. But I think the funny thing is, for all of you guys that listen to me, for all you guys that are on Twitter and, you know, in FT, you know, in football Twitter and everything, I think it has spoiled me in a sense that I feel like international football, I used to look forward to it. But I think the thing about international football is when you are, you know, when you are watching international football, when you're watching the team, like in my case, you know, my background is from Colombia. So I'm always watching the Colombian national team. That's the team that I'm, you know, that I'm looking forward to watching, that I'm invested in. They're not doing great. You know, they've had 3 games in a row where they haven't scored a goal, and they've basically been three nil-nil draws. That's what's been going on with Colombia the last few games. But, you know, for a lot of people, especially some of you that listen to me that don't come from countries where their national teams do well or have ever even gone to a World Cup, or in the case of Colombia, occasionally go to a World Cup, sometimes perform well, sometimes don't. I would say in the last, you know, we've had a couple generations that were good, but we've never gone very far aside from the quarterfinals. But we're not from some of us aren't from, let's say, a strong footballing nation like let's say a Brazil, a Germany, you know, these teams that are always expected to go through, you know. So with international football, it's and the thing is, with international football, it's like, unless you're from that country, or you're a fan, I guess, of some of the players, I guess, we watch. Let's say, you know, we want Karim Benzema to do well with France because we're such fans of him, of his, as Real Madrid players, as Real Madrid fans, I'm sorry. But we're invested in seeing them do well, but more because we want to see him do well. Not so much, you know, at least for me, not so much do I care. Really, am I so emotionally invested in seeing France do well, more so than I'm seeing him do well? Because if at the end of the day, if there's a game that ends up being Colombia versus France, I'm going to be going for Colombia because, of course, that's the team that I'm more invested in, as much as I love Karim Benzema or other players, like, let's say, Ferland Mendy, if he was on the team, you know, because he's been injured, or Camavinga, or these guys that play for Real Madrid. So what it is I feel like you know, lately, I guess since starting the podcast and being involved on Twitter and in conversations with a lot of you guys, I think what's interesting is that when you are in watching club football, the great thing about club football, and especially, you know, since I started this podcast, is seeing that, like, how so many of you, so many of us from that are fans of club football, whatever the team may be, whether you're a Real Madrid fan, whether you're a Manchester United fan, a Napoli fan, whatever it is, you come from a different walks of life, different countries, different places. You know, I mean, the fans that listen to this show, essentially, you know, I have friends that are, I have people that tune in from India, that tune in from here in the United States, that tune in from Venezuela, that tune in from Bangladesh, Nigeria, you know. So it's so cool to see that it's almost like, I mean, it's such a community in the sense that you follow this one team that you're following, and it's so many different from so many different people from different walks of life that are emotionally invested in the team, as opposed to national teams where it's really, unless you're from that country, very rarely, or it's one of the big countries that always do well in World Cups, there's not a sense of community around it unless it's, you know, the place of national origin that you happen, or the ethnicity that you happen to, you know, be a part of, I guess. So that's what's so cool, that I think with club football, all of us get so much more emotionally invested in it. And so it gets, I have to say, it's gotten a lot more boring when it goes on international break, because I really don't, aside from watching Colombia games, which they're not even doing well. So, I tune in when I have to tune in. I feel like that I do. I am passionate about that, and I have to tune in to see Colombia, but they're not playing well. So it gets to a point where I'm like, I don't really want to watch them. And then, you know, other games I'm not as interested in, you know, because they're qualifiers. When it comes to the World Cup, obviously everything switches because everyone's invested in, and everyone's kind of like, I feel like this team is going to win. I feel like this team is going to win. You kind of pick your favorites if, you know, your team didn't make it. But you pick your favorites of who you'd want to see win, and, you know, you have your heroes from different clubs that essentially play for different national teams, and so that's what you look at. But that's like one giant event. When it comes to these qualifiers and international break, I just feel it takes away from, you know, everything we're invested in during a season, you know. And the fact that they're trying, I guess it was announced today, or I don't know if it's going to be announced, but you know, the fact that they want to do the World Cup every 2 years, which I think is going to cause even more havoc in the league schedules and, you know, the domestic cup schedules and all the things that for a lot of us that are really into club football actually matter, is really annoying. You know, and I really hope that doesn't happen. I really hope people fight it and fight it to the death, because essentially, you know, if we're talking about football being ruined for the common fan, so many things have been said. I mean, I was against the Super League at the beginning. I've slowly gotten on board with it, but essentially because I feel like there just needs to be some changes in how it's going to go about. But this whole idea that people, you know, that the UEFA and FIFA want a better football for the fans is absolute garbage. You know, we all know that it's all about money, and it's all about influences, and you know, and all these big money, you know, people that are taking over these teams and everything, and investing millions and millions of dollars into teams, or billions of dollars into teams, you know, to essentially, I would say, in a lot of ways, I was kind of saying in the past, and essentially to try and buy greatness. It really, I think, ruins football at the end of the day. You know, there are your teams, there are your stories, there are your, but they're always going to be your kind of top teams. There are going to be teams that go through bad spells. You know, Real Madrid is currently, I think, going through that restructuring phase and is having that bad spell. Obviously, Barcelona is one of those. And you've had ups and downs with, you know, Manchester United, not at one point was, you know, very, very dominant, and not as dominant now as it was in the past. Liverpool is now returning to dominance after having been not dominant for many, many, many years. So it's kind of ups and downs, and those fluctuations are very normal. And I think I would rather those things be left alone. But, you know, you have these, you know, big money investors that come in, these states that basically state sponsored teams that come in and they try to buy up all these players, and they try to do all these things essentially to try and win Champions Leagues and try and, you know, make money. I guess make money because they, you know, obviously victory brings you money. But I think the essence of the game is lost. And that's why I think people still enjoy stories like Leicester and all that kind of stuff. And we still enjoy seeing the underdogs. I mean, I think it's funny because speaking about the Champions League, you know, I think a lot of people were interested in seeing, I mean, have been interested in, aside from us, you know, Madridistas being pissed off that Sheriff Tiraspol beat us in that last game, interested in seeing it is interesting to see a debutante, I'd say, in the Champions League, a team that is making its debut, that has never gone very far, you know, kind of making a splash, making people, you know, stand up and go, whoa, you know, these guys aren't really as bad as everyone thinks they are, you know, or as everybody thought they were. You know, they beat Shakhtar, which, you know, obviously we had a bone to pick with because we had lost two games against them in the last Champions League. And then they beat us. And then it was interesting to see them today against Inter tying the game at one point with an amazing free kick. And then obviously Inter getting the win at the end. But it's interesting to see teams like that step in and do well occasionally. I mean, I think that's even as a Real Madrid fan, at least in my eyes, at least even as a Real Madrid fan, I like seeing some of those other stories of teams that sort of emerge and do well, simply because they're just playing good football and the team is a unit. They probably have a good relationship with the coach. The coach seems like he's getting the players. The players understand what the coach wants. It seems like a very good unit of maybe not the greatest players in the world, but they're playing well as a team. They're playing good football, and they reach new levels. They go to new things. I mean, this is going to be whatever happens with, like, just as an aside, whatever happens with Sheriff Tiraspol in this Champions League, I think at the end of the day is going to be a huge benefit for football from Moldova and a lot of these guys that are playing for this team that essentially were unknowns before and now are getting a chance to put the world on notice that they definitely do have some talent, you know? And we talk about all these things of farmers leagues and, you know, there's all this banter about teams, you know, we talk so much shit about teams that are really, really quality teams being terrible simply because they're our rivals. But normally all of them have very professional world-class players, that to see some of these smaller teams go in and, I would say, you know, give the big teams a run for their money is always, I for me, at least as a football fan, is a pleasant sight to see. I mean, I would love for it not to happen against Real Madrid, you know, like it did against when we played Sheriff Tiraspol last time. But, it happens. You know, it happens. And, you know, I was talking about any given Sunday being that sort of that idea of any given Sunday. On any given Sunday, any team can beat any team can have their day where they will beat a big dog, where they would beat a big player. You know, Real Madrid lost against Sheriff Tiraspol. Then they lost against Espanyol. You know, and so every team has its ebbs and flows. I mean, every team does well and then has their days where they hiccup. I mean, you could even talk about today, Ajax coming up big against Dortmund, which, you know, Dortmund with Haaland and you know, all these great players that Dortmund has and also a strong history of being one of the top teams in Germany, getting absolutely dominated by Ajax. So a 4-0 loss to Ajax, and obviously Ajax is they're no slouches either. I mean, they're a team that has always produced some very interesting talent and end up selling them and they go to different clubs or whatnot, but they've always been one of the top teams, of course, in the Netherlands in the Eredivisie. So you know, a lot of craziness going on and just going about football. And I think just club teams give you that. Club football gives you that feel. I'm noticing I don't feel it as much for international football anymore. So before we go into chat about the game today against Shakhtar Donetsk, you know, thank you all for joining me. Of course, if you are joining, if you are listening to us on the podcast via audio, remember you can follow us, of course, on all platforms, whatever you're following on us now. We're on Google, we're on Stitcher, we're on Spotify, we're on Apple Podcasts. So please, guys, if you are an Apple Podcast, leave me a rating. Leave us a comment. Let us know how we're doing, because it helps us rise up in the ranks in the Apple Podcast library, because there's so much stuff out there. There's so much great content out there. But we'd also love to rise up the ranks. So if you are liking the show, please let us know how we're doing. You know, we are constantly trying to evolve and get things better and better. So that would do us a lot of help, of course. Right there, if you are watching on YouTube, you can subscribe to the YouTube channel. Just look up Y Nada Más Podcast on YouTube. You know, help me get to the, you know, I think you have to get to like 600, like 1,000 subscribers before I can have my own, exclusive URL. So help me drive those subscribers up. If you are listening right now on audio, we have the video version of the podcast. You can see that on our YouTube channel. You can check that out. And you can check that out by looking at, once again, going to YouTube, Y Nada Más Podcast. Look it up there. You will find it. And then hit the subscribe button, hit the notification button. And, you know, we're going to try to bring you all sorts of cool content as we continue to evolve this thing. Besides that, right there on the ticker, if you're watching on video, you'll see our social media. But for those of you listening, check us out. Of course, I am most active on Twitter. That is where I myself am always engaging with people. So I'm glad, you know, it's been exciting to talk with a lot of you. Check it out at Y Nada Más Podcast on Twitter. We are at Y Nada Más Podcast on Facebook and our Instagram. My good friend Carlos, who is our graphic designer here, alongside myself, who I also do some graphic design work here as well, and help with production. We are, you know, always posting up, you know, graphics and things like that. Whenever we, you know, get bit by the creative bug, you can check that out at YNM Podcast on Instagram. Then, of course, there is our website, inadamas.net, where you can find, of course, the episodes of the podcast, but you can also find articles by our senior contributor, Trombach B, who's our good friend, who has, he's actually been on vacation right now, out there, I think, in, where was he? He was in Rajasthan, which is, up, I guess, in the northern part. I might be wrong for you guys that are listening from India. I guess the northern part of India. I've heard it's very beautiful. I've always wanted to go to India as well. And hopefully one day I make my way out there and meet other Madridistas, all the Madridistas that are listening to us from India. So I thank you guys for that support. I thank you guys for listening. And a shout out to all of you guys out there in India who are really diehard football fans. I mean, regardless of what team, you guys are diehard football fans out there. So with that said, I mean, I don't want to ramble on too much. I mean, it was a fantastic game today. And I think a lot of things, you know, I wanted to talk about something. I wanted to talk about, like, after the Espanyol and Sheriff losses, you know, Sheriff was essentially, you know, any given Sunday. Once again, you know, that whole idea that it could happen. We called it like a fluke. We called it essentially a loss that was a big mistake. And everything seemed like we were going to be back on track against Espanyol, and that didn't happen either. So it was kind of a slip. And then, you know, you have all your Madridistas that are, again, you know, I don't know if they're just essentially very reactionary and they, you know, they're calling for Carlo Ancelotti's head. You know, they're already saying, you know, we, you know, he's just not doing things correctly. And I think there were things that we could say that essentially he was doing wrong. You know, one thing that I think that we can take away from this game, and I think I've always felt this, even from the last, if you listen to the podcasts that I had during last season, which was the 2020-2021 season, you know, one of the things that I felt was essentially, you know, this team, obviously Ancelotti wasn't there, it was Zidane, but this team, at least as long as I've always known it, Real Madrid always excels with the 4-3-3 formation. That's it's the football that drives Real Madrid. It's what I feel like drives us forward. I mean, it's always, you know, we've always had that very quick counter-attacking football, driven by very pacey wingers. You know, we had pace in our left backs and right in our fullbacks, essentially. A sturdy midfield, you know, all that kind of stuff that essentially gives us that Real Madrid way of then attacking and just bringing so many people forward, and playing really a very, very vertical attacking football. And I felt like it was very good at doing it. We are very good at doing that. And when we moved from the 4-3-3, it always seemed like that was where our players felt the most comfortable. Even under Zidane, even though Zidane had to, of course, with all the injuries we suffered during that season, had to experiment and try different things. I think at this point, what we've seen with Carlo Ancelotti's experimentation is essentially that this team cannot do that. You know, we just don't have the pieces, I think, or we can't really afford to experiment with this team, essentially, because I think a lot of the players are green. I think we still have a lot of young players. We still have players that essentially are good in their positions. They're good, let's say, maybe if you rotate them from left to right, but they're still, you know, wingers, they're moving forward or whatever. Let's say if you're moving Vinicius over to the right and then Hazard over to the left, vice versa, Rodrigo or whatever, and you're switching wingers, that you can possibly do. But, you know, this idea of trying to put in Nacho as left back, because I don't know why you don't want to, you know, why I do question why Ancelotti didn't want to give Miguel more chances at left back, and then playing Nacho as a left back, playing Alaba as a left back, even though, you know, he's done so well for us as a center back. And that's what we, you know, Ancelotti had, you know, said was going to happen, and what the position Alaba was going to play was going to be as a center back, and that he wasn't going to play him as a left back. So a lot of this experimentation, having Valverde as a right back, having, like I said, Nacho as a left back, you know, playing 4-4-2 and putting Valverde and Camavinga at some points as wing backs, you know, all these things led to a very disjointed, I would say, football that just, at the end of the day, just lacked, you know, was not lacking. I mean, because we have been scoring goals, and that has been the good thing. But I feel was lacking the incisiveness or the feeling of confidence in the team. And I think, you know, it took time, because you know you're building up, and he's trying to find what pieces he wants to play. But it seems like Ancelotti has essentially decided that he's going to play the 4-3-3. It made a huge difference today having Ferland Mendy back. I mean, it's insane to see how much of a difference that makes. Not only that, but of course, Toni Kroos coming back as well also made a huge difference today. It's just insane to see how much of a difference. You know, people like to say that one player sometimes doesn't make a difference on a team, but it really does, I think, because it's especially when when we look at last season with all these injuries and everything, all these when you start taking away pieces from the puzzle or building blocks, I would say, you start taking these foundational pieces away, cracks begin to appear, of course, in the team. And what I mean by that is, and I think I've talked about this a lot, at least this is my opinion, is, you know, the foundation of a team, you know, if the midfielders are confident in their back line or feel like their back line can do their job without them having to always be essentially looking over their shoulder and covering for somebody who might be making a mistake, then it allows them to do their job more clearly and focus on their tasks, you know? So it's almost like you're saying, you know, a plan A, you know, you go into any sort of situation, let's say in a game, of course, as a coach, whether it's a game, whether it's, you know, my background, like I always talk about when I was coaching fighters or when I was fighting myself, you have a plan A and then you have a plan B and then you have a plan C until you kind of run out of planification because the other team is taking you, the other team or other fighter or other, whatever it is, the other opponent, the opponent is taking you out so much of what you had planned or doing so well in basically matching you tit for tat in those in your planification that then you get to a point where you run out of ideas, you know. And what I mean, and in football, it's kind of like your plan A is having all your players, essentially having all your players fit in the positions that they're supposed to be playing in the positions that they feel comfortable in the positions that you as a coach know that they're comfortable in, and where you can reap the most rewards from them, essentially your meta, to use a gaming term, you know, your meta, you know, players in their meta positions. So essentially you can, you can do that. And that is your plan A. Plan B, you start moving things around, but as you start moving things around, the other players on the team, you know, also get weary of the fact that now you might have a guy who's normally a center back playing as a right back or playing as a left back. You normally have a guy who's more of a center midfielder. In the case of Casemiro, let's say, with Toni Kroos out, a guy who's more of a center defensive midfielder playing more as a center mid, or, you know, kind of trying to be that guy who pushes forward a little bit more and trying to essentially be a somewhat of a creative outlet when that's not really his game. You know, we would see Casemiro try to be more, play more of a passing game, instead of being that, you know, sort of more destroyer role that he has, that wall role that he has, which is really just breaking down the opposition's play and then passing the, getting, you know, passing the ball to the midfielders or to the forwards as quickly as possible. You know, without the likes of Toni Kroos being with his vision and his control of the game and his ability to be creative and set things up and set up plays, Casemiro has to essentially step forward and do that job. So then who does Casemiro's job? So you see what I mean by the chips starting to kind of fall, the foundation starting to have cracks. And especially with our defense, which is in this case a defense that is new, because although we've had Nacho and Militao step in last season for injured Varane, for injured Sergio Ramos, who are no longer now with the club. So they've essentially gone from being our plan B guys to becoming our plan A guys. And they did a great job last season in playing their hearts out day in and day out. But it's been difficult for them to sort of bring that same intensity, that same skill set, that same feeling this season, at least so far for Nacho. I think Militao has been definitely a lot stronger than Nacho has been. And then, of course, I think the acquisition of Alaba played a huge role in helping us out, getting some experience in that, and replacing at least one of the two, whether it's Varane or Sergio Ramos, with, you know, being a qualified, tried and true, experienced, you know, at a very high level center back, even though he also has played as a left back for much of his career and then moved to a center back. But he's been, his awareness is key. You know, his awareness is key. And then having that with Militao, having it with Carvajal, who is now missing again because of injury. And then we're bringing back Lucas Vazquez, which was, I feel like, our only weak, when I saw the lineup, was the only thing that I felt like was weak this game. But he actually ended up playing pretty well. But at the same time, it was also because it was a game that allowed, I think, didn't call on us defensively as much as we, as much as other games have. So, and then just Ferland Mendy coming back again, you know, again, it was just seeing that. And I think what it is once again, I feel like having Ferland Mendy back, it almost feels like it gives a calmness back to the midfield again, essentially feeling like, okay, I don't have to look over my left shoulder now to see if Ferland Mendy is correctly tracking back, is doing what he needs to do defensively, because I know that that is his position and he can do it, and he can do it very well, which I don't think is the same for the midfield, especially like a player like Toni Kroos or whoever's playing the midfield role in that case, in, let's say, on the sort of a left center midfielder. The guy who's playing that role essentially doesn't feel as confident when, let's say, somebody like Nacho, who's not naturally a left back, is playing in that position. A Marcelo, who has definitely slowed down over the years, or a Miguel, who might still seem very green, is in that position. The fact that Ferland Mendy was there and they are confident in his ability to do so, I feel like frees up, not to say they freeze up Vinicius from having defensive responsibilities, but allows him to focus more on what he needs to focus on, or what he is more comfortable in, which is, you know, going forward, making those incisive runs, going, you know, and going at the defenders, and, you know, essentially playing his game, feeling confident, and playing with a confidence that got him a world-class goal today, of course, against Shakhtar. So all of those things, I think, played a huge influence, of course, in what we saw today against Shakhtar. And it's not that, I feel like, you know, a lot of people are going to say, oh, well, it's Shakhtar Donetsk. Shakhtar Donetsk is a team that always, that makes the Champions League pretty much every year. So it's not a team that doesn't, that lacks experience. We actually played, I would say, a worse Shakhtar Donetsk last season when, you know, about, I don't know, it was like 15 or was it 11 or 12 players were out due to COVID. And we were essentially playing some of their youth players, and we got run over by Shakhtar in two different games, you know. So there was a bone to pick, and we brought out a starting 11 with Ancelotti, essentially, you know, with our top players, with our midfield three, which they just continue to churn out quality. They just, they are incredible when they are, when they are fit, when they are not tired. I mean, as the season goes on, of course, you can't just be playing Kase, Kroos, and Modric every single game, day in and day out. But thankfully, this season, we have backups with the likes of Camavinga, with the likes of Valverde, who can fill those positions and do well filling those positions, which is going to be very important as the season goes on. But it was evident today, again, in 2021, a 36-year-old Luka Modric, a 31-year-old Toni Kroos, and a 28 or 29 Casemiro. Essentially, you know, these guys continuing to do what they do and do it incredibly well, which is just keep the midfield so tight, so compact, not allowing really the opposition to do much in sort of formulating a attack plan, and then, you know, giving the defense enough time to really get there, you know, to really allow them to essentially deal with any trouble that comes their way. So I think that's what we saw today against Shakhtar, a team that was, you know, organized, a team that was confident, a team that was essentially feeling like they had all the pieces that they need in order to excel. There was a lot of confidence on the field, and that confidence was reflected in the goals that Vinicius scored, especially, you know, his second goal, his first goal where he chipped the keeper, a beautiful through pass by Luka Modric, a cutting pass right through the middle by Luka Modric that essentially caught the entire defense, that cut right through the defense, caught them off guard, and essentially gives it right to Vinicius, who chips the keeper. Beautiful pass there. You know, beautiful work by Benzema, being more of the creative, playing more of a creative number 10 role, essentially, in this game than being the striker that he is. But doing those two things and showing how well he can do them, you know, offering assists as well to Vinicius second goal. You know, there was so many different things that went well here, you know. And then you have, of course, you know, Rodrigo continuing to showcase incredible talent, especially coming up big always in the Champions League with another goal. in the Champions League as well. Benzema then gets his own goal as well. It was a very good performance all around by the entire team. I mean, if you look at as well, you know, even the goal that that Shakhtar Donetsk, the own goal they scored, was a, you know, wicked cross by Lucas Vazquez. That own goal, Lucas Vazquez whips a very good cross into the box. And, you know, the Shakhtar defender essentially has Karim Benzema making a run behind him. Karim Benzema, of course, I'm thinking in that Shakhtar defender's mind, he's like, I got Karim Benzema right behind me, a guy who's right now being considered for the Ballon d'Or, who's been having a phenomenal season. I have this guy right behind me where if he gets on the ball, most likely he's going to score. I have to put a foot in. I have to try. And essentially he puts a foot in trying to stop the ball from getting to Benzema and ends up putting it his own net. I mean, that type of play essentially there is pressure by Madrid to cause an error in their opponent. So just all around a solid performance. I mean, I brought up some of the stats here, these, you know, from SofaScore, you know, which usually a lot of you guys are looking at. I look through them. I look at who scored. I mean, you look at the ball possession, of course, Real Madrid had the most of it. Total shots, we had 23 shots. Shots on target, 10. Shots off target were 8. They, you know, so essentially, you know, the passing, 92% pass accuracy, 75% of our long balls were 75% long balls were successful. You know, there was just a lot of good things. A lot of interceptions, a lot of tackles, clearances. I mean, Shakhtar, we actually let them off the hook quite a bit in the first half. You know, there was a great shot by Karim Benzema where Shakhtar's keeper stopped it. Another shot by Toni Kroos, which was good to see him. You know, us taking shots from outside the box. You know, Toni Kroos made a great shot that was parried away by the keeper. The same thing with Karim Benzema. So, you know, some really good chances there that didn't come to fruition. But we end up walking away with the lead in the first half because, once again, I said, that constant pressure. I felt like, you know, we were essentially dominating the game, but we were just not able to put away chances. Something that did not happen, of course, in the second half where those chances did, that pressure did pay dividends, and then it continues to open up. You know, so that was the overall stats of the game. And then, of course, you know, our top players, you know, Benzema, of course, he was just all over the pitch. I think he was playing definitely more of a role where he was setting up plays, being creative. You know, he had 2 key passes, big chances created, 1, 73 touches on the ball. You look at these ground duels won. He had 6 ground duels won. Aerial duels, he won 1. He made an interception. He made a tackle. He made a clearance. You could see that he was tracking back and trying to help the defense. That's the one thing that I saw that I really liked with Real Madrid. And not only were they doing well going forward, but, you know, the team was, all of everyone on the team was doing their due diligence to come back and defend and make sure that, you know, they weren't leaving opportunities open for Shakhtar Donetsk to score. I mean, you could tell that it was in their minds that the things that happened last season against Shakhtar Donetsk, where we lost, you know, 3-2 and in the Alfredo Di Stefano, and then lost 2-0 in Kiev. You know, those things, or what was it? Was it in Kiev or wherever it was in Donetsk or at Donbass Arena? I don't know if they're still if that's where we played last time, but I think it was in Kiev. Either way, you know, the fact that we played, we lost that game as well, 2-0. Essentially, all this stuff I think was on their mind because they came out and they played extremely well. I don't think I have a negative thing to say really about anybody on the field. You know, having Toni Kroos back, I think he had, I don't have the stat right here, in my graphics, but, I think it was something like, you know, of course, always coming up with that 96% pass accuracy, the highest on the team, you know, just doing, you know, once again, he was also, I think he got a couple of tackles as well. He was, you know, getting, winning ground duels. He was making, you know, key passes, of course, and doing everything that he needed to do essentially to help our attack. And then Vinicius, of course, you know, here I'm throwing stuff up on the screen for you guys that are listening. Vinicius, of course, was the other star of the day. You know, I mean, three shots on target, two of them, which were goals, one assist. Of course, he had one shot that was blocked. His dribble attempts, of course, we saw, you know, he got two successful dribbles, and one of them was an absolute, you know, that solo run that he made to make his, that he did to score his second goal was just absolutely phenomenal. I think that is the goal of this Champions League match day, unless somebody pulls off something tomorrow that is just as insane. But what a job by Vinicius today. I mean, essentially showing everyone and continuing to show this season and shutting me up in a lot of ways, because, you know, I think somebody had put it on Twitter, you know, that a lot of people, you know, hey, we're going to remember a lot of you guys that were talking trash about Vinicius, or that were saying, which was something I was saying, how long are we going to wait for the Vinicius, the potential that everyone sees in Vinicius, how long are we going to wait around for it to finally show up? And yeah, the answer is we had to wait a little bit, but I mean, the kid is what, 21, you know, and he has come in guns blazing this season, and it has been absolutely phenomenal. So, I mean, and he showed it again in this game that when he's on fire, he's on fire. When he comes to play, and this season he has come to play, and with growing confidence, you know, it is going, he is going to be absolutely lethal. And that was what he did today. I mean, he had 82% accuracy, four key passes, big chances created, one, you know, he had one, like I said, you know, the two goals, one assist. He was phenomenal today. He was phenomenal. I mean, what, I could think that he arguably could have gotten man of the match as well, but Karim Benzema was, you know, did also a phenomenal job. And, you know, he's just Karim Benzema, of course, scoring goals, setting things up, getting the assists as well. You know, doing things, tracking back, like I said, making clearances, getting interceptions, making tackles. I mean, he was doing his job as well, helping the team even in the back. So that was something that was, that I think, you know, earned him that step above Vinicius as just attacking. But both of them were absolutely phenomenal today. Rodrigo, I've always said I've loved Rodrigo. And I felt like he was always a more complete player than Vinicius. Maybe doesn't have the dribbling, maybe doesn't have, you know, that flair that Vinicius has. But I think his mind is a little bit clearer when it comes to finishing. I feel like he's a little bit more controlled, or calm, cool, and collected when it comes to when he's in front of goal. Now, of course, Vinicius can rapidly catch up to that, and he has shown that this season. So having them both in full fitness, these two Brazilian, you know, phenoms essentially that are, you know, we have in our ranks that are still young, can be, are the future of Madrid, I believe, at this point. I mean, if for the right wing, unless you're talking about, well, which I don't think is going to, are we going to find, you know, are we going to see the Gareth Bale of old when he comes back from injury? I doubt it. You know, even though he's still, you know, when he has the ball and when he wants to play well, Gareth Bale is a world class. But I think these guys are the future. I don't think, you know, we've tried Asensio there, doesn't work. He's not working. He hasn't been, you know, he's sporadically good. You know, like he did, you know, he scored three goals against Mallorca, but that was playing more of in a role, more central role, instead of being on the right wing. You know, at this point, I think there's nobody else to really compete for that spot beside Rodrigo, and maybe Hazard, but, you know, and I love Hazard. I think he's done, played really well this season, aside from not being, not scoring. I think he's done great when he's on the pitch. And I think he gets a lot of hate because of the fact that, you know, he's been so injury prone. But I mean, these guys are the future. I think the younger guys, of course, we're seeing that really the talent that we have on our team is in the youth. And those guys are kind of stealing the show at the moment. Rodrigo, of course, Vinicius, of course. Our midfield, I think, is still going to be untouchable. But having guys like Camavinga and Valverde healthy this time, you know, not sitting there on the, you know, sitting there on the bench, essentially injured or in the stands injured, or having so many players out, that is going to pay. That's going to be very important as the season rolls on. And, you know, I want to see if this team, basically like this team today was our plan A, with the exception of course, Lucas Vázquez playing as a right back. But I mean, if Carvajal could possibly stay healthy, which would be an amazing thing for us, you know, this plan A team is as solid as ever. But, you know, I really think, you know, going back to the Carvajal situation, I think it's kind of high time that we really need to invest in a right back. Because if Carvajal's issues continue, which at this point I think they will, we are going to have a lot of problems filling that spot. And we're going to get, especially against tough teams, you know, teams that really know how to play, you know, that really will start attacking that right-hand side where Lucas Vázquez is. You know, he has the tendency to get caught ball watching. He has the tendency to get beaten on that right-hand side, to lose his man, to, you know, he just has, he makes defensive mistakes, but that's because he is not a natural right back. He's played that position before, but he's more of a right winger, definitely a winger that, you know, has that. If you are wanting, if you are playing a team that is, I feel like if you're playing a team that is tough and you need to be a little bit more defensive, he is a solid right winger that can be, have more of a defensive presence. But besides that, I mean, he is not, you know, as much as he impressed me last season, I still feel like he is just not a starter for this team. And really to have him as our only other option at right back is really an issue that we have to solve, because Carvajal is going to continue having these injury problems. And hopefully not. Hopefully, you know, he comes back and we can finally see Carvajal do better and just get into full fitness again. But it's been ongoing, you know, and it sucks because he's so phenomenal and it makes such a difference when he's on the field. Just like Ferland Mendy made a difference today when he was on the field, Carvajal makes a huge difference and you notice it. And again, I think it goes back to the confidence that it instills in the entire team. When they know Carvajal is there, they know that they got that side covered. They know that he will be there to help. And essentially, it takes a load off. It takes a load off for that, like I said, for that player to start looking over his shoulder and being like, okay, is this guy where he needs to be? Do I need, you know, they always need to be aware, of course, but when you have a guy that you're confident is always doing his job, then of course it does take a little bit of a load off. And I think you get to focus on what you need to focus on the position that you need to focus on. I mean, I think that's ideally what you want in a team, is that all your, let's say all the cogs in the machine are running well. And that is what I feel we saw today and what led to this dominant win over Shakhtar. It doesn't matter that it was Shakhtar Donetsk. You know, Shakhtar Donetsk has proven in the past that they have quality players. They have quality players. They have caused fits to other teams. But, you know, we look dominant today. And it's a good win, a good morale booster, especially right before we play El Clásico against Barcelona, which even when Barcelona is down, even when Barcelona is not playing well, even when you know, we can make all sorts of jokes about how they are dusted at this point, you still have to play them. And they have talented players like Pedri, like, you know, these youthful players that have shown that they are strong, like Pedri, like Ansu Fati. They have Memphis Depay. They have these guys that can show up and make a difference when they want to. And especially if we get caught sleeping. If we get caught sleeping, they can win. if we don't get caught sleeping and we play like we played today and we're compact, we're quick, we're, you know, our guys are playing very, our guys are on their game. I think we can, we'll definitely dominate this El Clásico, but it remains to be seen. You know, it remains to be seen, of course, and the concentration has to continue and the level has to continue. But it was a good win today to get, you know, boost that morale, boost that feeling, boost that confidence. And we'll see, you know, we'll see, will Barcelona arrive to the Camp Nou this weekend on Sunday? Will they arrive a team that is with, you know, kind of has regained confidence if they beat Dynamo Kiev tomorrow? Or will they come in, you know, needing to kind of show up because they didn't perform? That a lot of, we'll see that. Will a lot of it will depend on how they perform against Dynamo. So we'll have to see that. But yeah, I think it's going to be, you know, if this was, if these two games, like, you know, the Sheriff Tiraspol loss and the Espanyol loss were what we needed to sort of wake up, for Ancelotti to stop experimenting so much with formations or, you know, makeshift positions for certain players. If that's what we needed, then it, so be it. If at the end of the day, it works in our benefit to win games, to get, you know, to get back on track, and it was just a momentary blip on the schedule, at the end of the day, it doesn't matter. You know, it was necessary. And I actually think the international break came at the right time, because the international break came at a time where Toni Kroos had just come back, but he wasn't at full fitness yet. Ferland Mendy wasn't available. We weren't going to play him again, like, you know, that risk that Zidane took last season playing again against Chelsea, which in the end, I think, ended up aggravating the injury and pushing him out to where it was. But, you know, of course, we needed to win that game, you know, so it's understandable. But, you know, you do pay for those type of things. And so rushing people to get fit, and especially in the, you know, that those two seasons, I mean, that season ago, where we didn't have really, we had so many injuries and so many problems, you know, that you, they had to make that decision. But I feel like this, you know, this international break came perfectly positioned. Yes, we took two losses, but then it was a good time for the players to reassess, get a change of scenery, go to their national teams if they were playing for them, get the rest they needed if they weren't going to play with the international teams and were recovering from injury. It helped them all get back to the fitness that we need them at. And they showed up today. And I really hope they show up this weekend. I feel like this is kind of the page turner we needed. So that is, you know, it all remains to be seen. We'll see what happens with Barcelona tomorrow, see how they perform in the Champions League. Hopefully they get dusted. I mean, that's what I always kind of want to see. And, you know, we can kind of finish, kind of dig in that dagger a little deeper when we beat them in El Clásico. But we'll see what happens. You know, I'm confident. I'm feeling good after this win. It's always good to have a win under your belt before a Clásico. So I'm happy about it. So that's all I have for today, guys. You know, I wanted to do a kind of a quick podcast, of course, after we were, you know, after the game. You know, I don't normally do them after the Champions League, but I kind of want to do them, you know, when I get a chance, because it kind of helps to not have to go over two games, you know, every, you know, weekend when I do the weekend podcast and only go over the La Liga game in the weekend. But it really depends on my work schedule. So usually I always stick to that, you know, Monday time frame is going to be the one for each new podcast. But, you know, I'm going to try to do the Champions League's one during the week when I can, you know, because I think they're quicker. And especially if we do well, then, you know, it's I'm in a better mood to do them. All right, guys. So thank you much, very much for joining the podcast today. And basically, yeah, once again, if you are tuning in on Apple Podcasts, if you are tuning in on Apple Podcasts, please make sure to drop by Apple Podcasts or right there on the app. Give us a rating, you know, whether it's 4 stars, 3 stars, 5 stars, whatever it is you want to give us. Leave a comment. That helps us rise up the ranks. That helps us a lot. If you're not on Apple Podcasts, you're on Spotify, you're on any of those, thank you for listening to us. Of course, it doesn't matter, you know, as long as you guys are listening and enjoying the show, that's all that matters to us. And at the end of the day, you know, also follow us at Inadamas on Twitter, Inadamas Podcast on Twitter. That's where I'm most available and, you know, kind of always online a little bit. Well, most of the time. And on Inadamas Podcast on Facebook and YNM Podcast on Instagram. So those are our three social medias. And then, of course, our website, inadamas.net, where you can find articles by our good friend Trombach, our senior contributor there, as well as the podcast episodes. And, you know, we're going to figure out what else we can start adding. Let us know, man. Drop me a line on Twitter. Let me know if you know how you're liking the podcast. Leave us a comment, of course, in Apple Podcasts, or on Facebook, of course. Of course, you can always send us an email at info@inadamas.net. You know, send us, you know, your suggestions, what you would like to hear more from the podcast. What would you like us to do? Would you like us to bring on more guests? Would you like us to include other, you know, bloggers? I know that there's a bunch of you guys on Twitter as well that do podcasts as well. So hopefully I can, you know, bring one of you guys on as well and start having more of the discussions. I will, of course, bring on Trombach occasionally, my good friend Jota Real Madrid. You know, I also owe the guys from the Madridista Roundabout podcast an invitation. So because they invited me on their podcast, I owe them one to come, you know, to come on this podcast and discuss Real Madrid. So we will do that as well. So I want to have more people, so it's not just myself, because it's always sometimes difficult to keep things going when you're by yourself. But that's it, guys. Thank you again for listening to the podcast. Thank you again for joining us. We will be back this weekend for a post El Clásico podcast. And, you know, I'm expecting that we're going to come out with a win and with plenty of banter and with plenty of things to say about the game. But that's it for me here on Inadamas. Remember, you can also check us out on the video, on the YouTube. Thank you guys that are watching on YouTube. Thank you very much for joining. And that's it from me. Talk to you again soon.
This has been Inadamas, al Real Madrid Podcast.